here. What it do? Mike Crenshaw coming through. Loving what I do and doing what I love. And therein lies the root of the struggle, y'all. So here it is. Another banger for your body and your mind. Check it out once. A lot of people act funny, but they not Chappelle. It's like dudes acting hard when they soft as snails. We all know what would happen if I stomp their shells. I leave their contents runny like some chocolate milk. I got a practice regimen to lax impediment.
Hey Portland, I'm Alex Inglehart, and welcome to Locals Only Radio, where we get to hear from the rich musical talents of Portland, Oregon. Today, I'm joined by Mike Crenshaw. Mike Crenshaw is an MC, educator, and spoken word artist, and activist. Mike was born in Chicago and grew up between there and Minneapolis-St. Paul, Minnesota. In the 80s and 90s, Mike was active in the anti-racist skinhead movement and a founding member of the Minneapolis Baldies and Anti-Racist Action. In 1992, Mike moved to Portland, Oregon, where he became one of the most respected hip-hop artists in the Pacific Northwest. Mike is currently a teaching artist in residence in multiple schools and organized international cultural exchange tours to various countries in Africa and Europe. Mike is the executive director of Education Without Borders, and Mike is a co-producer and narrator of the It Did Happen Here podcast and co-author of the book by the same name. Mike released Retribution, a full-length solo album with singles We Are Tigers, Africa, and Ice Twice Baby in April 2026. I've been loving listening to welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Alex.
I've been loving listening to the singles that you put out from this new album. The video from Ice Twice Baby was my favorite. I think it's really cool. Features a lot of like Portland scenes in it. It seems like your upcoming album is similar to a lot of your music in that it's sending a message. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Sure, yeah, thank you. Shout out to Anthony Rivera and Drew, Johnny Cool, my features on Ice Twice Baby. And for those of you listening, that video is available on YouTube, so I encourage you to check it out.
Yeah,
and,
great.
Thank you. Yeah, the album is 17 songs. I've been working on it for about 8 years. I think when I, at the end of one of my last projects, I just continued to write and record, not really sure what I was gonna do with the music. Mm-hmm. And then after a number of years, it occurred to me that, oh, this is a body of work, I should release it. So that album's coming out April 3rd, a couple weeks from now. And there's a lot of reflection on social, political, kind of context of the times that we're in, which is really what I do. You know, I write about other things sometimes, but I always kind of land there. And so there's a lot of that reflection on the album.
Cool. Yeah, I'm really excited to listen to the rest of it. I think, yeah, the songs that I've heard right now are things that we need to be hearing and thinking about, and especially in this time. So
thank you.
Yeah, it's important work. You are widely known as a prolific writer and poet, from your days as the frontman of the Portland hip-hop group Hungry Mob to becoming a national finalist in poetry, not to mention all of your full-length albums and multiple EPs. I'm curious about the origins of your writing practice. Like, when did you start writing or putting together bars?
You know, when I was a young boy, about 6 or 7 years old, I heard the first rap songs that made it to my ears that were popular. Mm. You know, there was The Message by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. There was, what else was there? The Breaks by Curtis Blow. And then on in to Run DMC. You know, I lived in the Midwest, was going back and forth between Chicago, some smaller towns in Illinois. Black radio was strong in Chicago. And you know, sometimes some of those, the rap songs would make it down to some of the other cities that I lived in. And as soon as I heard rap music, I knew like that was something that I wanted to like experience, you know.
Yeah.
And I started trying to emulate what I heard these MCs doing on the radio and on tapes and records. And I was able to like basically imitate what they were doing, but put in my own words.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the beginning of me being able to freestyle. So for fun, for recreation, I used to just improv and make up my own rhymes just for fun, you know? And as I grew, I got better at it. And so I started, by the time I was in high school, I think I would battle kids on the bus or in the classroom, you know, or at lunch.
Yeah.
And it became something that people looked to me for. Like I developed a reputation as somebody that could rap.
Yeah.
And I could, it's, you know, that was in the 80s, early 80s at that time. And movies like Breaking and Beat Street and Style Wars were coming out. And so hip hop was starting to spread in youth culture. And I couldn't b-boy, you know. I love to watch guys break dance. I used to try to pop lock, but it just wasn't my thing. I couldn't DJ because I didn't have, you know, a record player and a record collection like that. But rapping was something I could do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. You had the words
for
it. That's awesome. What inspires you to write a poem or a song?
So there's, you know, social issues that impact our lives, right? There's being black in America, there's stuff that impacts me personally, culturally, and economically. And so those are the things that kind of inspire me, the struggles of trying to succeed and have a good life, but then also encountering systemic barriers. And so the impact that that has on like my mental health, my imagination, is stuff that I write about.
Oh, that's an important message, I feel like.
Thanks.
Yeah, share with people. On another note, you were the co-host of It Did Happen Here. This podcast documents the fight against Portland, Oregon-based racist skinheads in the 1980s and 90s after the murder of Mulugeta Sarraw. This podcast is so important, and I just recently listened to it. I'm so grateful for its unique documentation of our city's background, the good, the bad, the ugly. I learned more about the origins of racism in Portland and also strategies our communities use to fight back against violence. What really intrigued me was your talk about the Minneapolis Baldies and how you got started doing activism through them. And I'd love for our audience to hear a little bit about that from you.
Sure. When I was, 16 years old, I made a new group of friends as I was coming out of treatment for substance abuse. I was a sophomore in high school. I had to change schools because, you know, the counselors in the treatment program were like, you can't go back to the same social circles, you know, if you want to stay sober. So I started kicking it in the punk scene, looking for new friends.
Yeah.
And I found some straight edge friends. And a handful of us created the Minneapolis Baldies. At first, there were about seven of us who would just explore the city and skateboard and, you know, do a lot of recreational and social stuff together. And one of our guys had a book, and he was a skinhead, and he had a book called Skinhead by Nick Knight. And it was like a documentary book about the origins of skinhead culture.
Yeah.
And we just, you know, we identified with it as something that we wanted to embody ourselves. So we got into the music, we got into the style, and right around the time we started bonding around that socially, there was an explosion of neo-Nazi skinheads in the United States that were copying parts of a British subculture within the skinhead movement. And the reason they blew up was because there was a lot of daytime talk shows that platformed them. And so a lot of white kids across America saw that and said, I want to be like that. So a group of kids organized by a man who was in the Ku Klux Klan showed up in our scene, in our punk scene.
Wow.
So right around the time we got close and said we are skinheads, there came these neo-Nazis saying that they were skinheads. And we were like, no, we're not going to accept you in our scene. And so we started to draw boundaries and violently exclude them from our scene because they were attacking people. And we didn't want to be the targets of racial terror. At the time, we knew that the only way to protect our scene was through violent confrontation and to defend our community. And So yeah, that was the beginning of the Minneapolis Baldies. You know, we called ourselves the Baldies because we knew that people were seeing skinheads on TV and in the media depicted as neo-Nazis. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, we don't want people to think that that's what we are.
Yeah.
So we gave ourselves a name that, you know, kind of drew on inspiration from some older gang cultures that existed in America. There were Baldies gangs in Minneapolis and other cities. And our movement grew because there were a lot of people who also wanted to defend our communities from that type of violence. Mm. And so we drew allegiances with some of those people, and that was the beginning of anti-racist action.
Yeah, it's really cool to hear about in the podcast. And the effectiveness of this, like, anti-racist action, the violent action against the white supremacists. And what was it in the podcast, like, after, like, 3 concerts in the punk scene in Portland of, like, anti-racist action showing up and intimidating the white skinheads, they stopped showing up for a while. And it's really inspiring to see, like, that kind of stuff really work, you know, in the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Community, that legacy of community defense and direct action is has been effective at times. Mm-hmm. It's under attack currently. Mm. It has a history of being criminalized in this country. The way that the white supremacist violence is protected and the way that our response to that is criminalized is part of this nation's history. Mm-hmm. And it is of concern, you know, because you have people who already are marginalized and oppressed because of racism, white supremacy, you know, the oppression of people with, you know, non-binary sexual identities, mm-hmm. and immigrants. And so there has to be a means for people to stand up, you know. And so when that's criminalized, it reinforces the oppression that's already part of this society, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I think one of my questions for you, I think, is because you've done violent action as activism, but you're also an artist and an educator, which is a nonviolent form of activism. And I think a lot of people on either side could argue the effectiveness of either one. But I'm wondering what you see as, like, effective activism on, and just in general, what makes activism effective?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the forms of direct action and community defense that we were engaged in, I want to, you know, clarify and reinforce that it's community defense. You know, the way that we were engaging through physical confrontation and activity that was often violent was a form of self-defense, and it was a form of collective community defense.
Right. Against the violence
of the white supremacists, right? Who's, you know, according to their ideology, the people that they target don't deserve to exist. Mm. And definitely don't deserve to feel safe in this country, in this mm-hmm. society. And so in order for us to respond to that, it was necessary to respond in a way that let them know that it wasn't safe for them to attack us and people in our communities. So that's something that was necessary at the time. It's something that I think community defense is always on the table. Mm. Self-defense is always on the table when you are vulnerable, when you are marginalized, when you are under attack. Mm-hmm. You know, there was talk of the ICE raids in Minneapolis in which, you know, three people had died. One young person, I forget their name, had been displaced to Texas and died while in custody in Texas, if I'm not mistaken. And then, of course, there were the two people, you know, Rene Good and Alex Preddy, that died on the streets of Minneapolis. But what I understand is that the way that the community was forced to respond, there was a diversity of tactics. You know, there were people who were doing things like getting people food and groceries because people were afraid to leave their homes. There were rapid response networks where people would show up when they knew that ICE was attacking and trying to kidnap, detain people. just to be bodies, to try to intervene and interrupt that activity. Right. And at a certain point, there were people who were armed, who made a visible presence to let ICE know that we're going to meet your force with right. the same force. And in that, no ICE agents were shot and killed, right? But it helped, from my understanding, to change the level of aggression that ICE was expressing and yeah. exerting in certain situations. Absolutely. And so what that says to me, what that teaches us, is that sometimes people who present a violent threat need to understand that you can defend yourself and that there's a risk to their safety if they continue to threaten you. And yeah. that's not always necessary, you know, and it's in and of itself, it's only effective to a certain extent. Sustainable community defense that creates longer lasting safety is something that has to embody a diversity of tactics. So we have to think about not only the last resort of physical confrontation if necessary, but we have to be organized to feed ourselves, to keep each other in our homes, to keep each other safe, and to strategize together right. long term, yeah. right? So I just see that, you know, violent self-defense that could result in violence is just part of right. a diversity of tactics. And it's really unfortunate that we even have to consider this, right?
Resort to that.
We're at a disadvantage often because working people, normal everyday people, don't have the finances of, you know, the stolen income in the form of tax that finances right. these other uniform alphabet agencies to come out here in our communities and assault people, attack people, kill people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're forced to figure out ways to organize where we're not getting paid and we're doing it because it's the right thing to do. And who's going to protect us right. but us?
But us, yeah. That's really powerful. And I think, like, reframing, like, like violent action into like community of defense, because that is what it is, you
Correct.
Know, it's yeah, it's protecting ourselves because the government's not doing that for us, you know, so yeah, that's yeah. really valuable thing to remember during these times, that we can defend ourselves if we work together.
That's right.
Yeah. Thank you for speaking on that. Speaking of your activism, you also are the owner of a nonprofit called Education Without Borders. Can you tell me a little bit about what you do with them?
Yeah, I'm an executive director.
Executive director.
And I have a wonderful board that supports the work that we do. Wonderful beneficiaries. You know, we do arts and education initiatives locally, regionally, nationally, and internationally. A lot of the work that I've done with Education Without Borders started when I joined the board back in, I think, like 2001.
Okay.
Dan Shea, shout out to Dan Shea from Veterans for Peace. He was a board member at the time. I think he was the president, and he invited me to be part of the board and support the work that they were doing. Shout out to Books for Prisoners, who used to be part of we were a fiscal sponsor for that organization, and they've since gone on and gotten their own 501c3. And yeah, we're currently engaged in food security projects in Burundi, Central Africa, which started back in 2007. We started, launched an effort to establish a computer center in Bujumbura, Burundi, and that had evolved from a computer center to help people become computer literate, and different language teaching classes, language education classes, to farms, orchards, wells for potable drinking water. And over the years, I continued to visit Africa. Some of the people that I met through a conference in Rwanda in 2004, who helped start the, initiated the project in Burundi, invited me to play a music festival in 2012.
Oh,
in
cool.
Harare, Zimbabwe, called the Shoko Fest.
Wow, that sounds awesome.
It was amazing. It was the second time I went to Africa, but this time instead of going for a conference on human rights and justice and genocide reconciliation and youth empowerment, as I had prior, I was going just to perform. And when I performed at the Shoko Music Festival, I met a lot of cultural activists who were part of the hip hop communities across the southern and central regions of Africa.
Cool.
And they invited me to be part of a touring project called the African Hip Hop Caravan.
Okay.
So in 2012, I was invited. In 2013, 2014, and 2015, I toured South Africa, Kenya, Zimbabwe, and Tanzania. And I met a lot of amazing hip-hop artists. We would perform
all
for
African hip-hop
artists? And I met, there were a couple of supporting artists from different countries.
Cool.
So Baki Coles, Wavy Joseph, both from Portland, had come out. DJ Alicia B from Colorado, from Denver, Colorado, had come out. There was a guy named Max from Germany, from Halle, Germany. And he later invited me to go play at the Breathe In, Breathe Out Music Festival in Halle, Germany. And then later I got to play in Berlin. You know, so all these relationships form. And then I got invited to the Trinity International Hip Hop Festival and met hip hop artists from Moscow. And then was later able to go do
That's
a hip-hop
crazy.
Exchange in Moscow. So yeah, the African Hip-Hop Caravan was hosted and organized primarily by indigenous African hip-hop collectives.
Cool.
Sounds of the South in South Africa, Uhuru Network in Harare, Zimbabwe, Save Underground Artists in Tanzania, and in Arusha, Tanzania. And I'm blanking on the name. I'm sorry, y'all. It's Swahili words. I think it's like something from the streets.
Okay.
In Nairobi, Kenya.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, each city has its own hip hop scene.
Uh-huh.
And all these guys are cultural activists. So they're not only artists and poets and DJs and rappers and so forth, but they're also community organizers and educators.
Cool.
And I, through doing that, over a number of years, formed some pretty strong relationships with people in Tanzania, and they invited me to help them with this farm project that we recently launched. And so, yeah, they're feeding Kilaridi Masai. Shout out to him. He's featured on my album and a few singles.
Is that he's in Africa?
He's
right?
on that song, song Africa yeah. with A Revolution. Yeah.
Cool. And you shot that music video in Africa, right? Where where was that?
So that was in Tanzania. We were in the area of Ngorongoro Crater.
Okay.
Which is
it's beautiful.
It's amazing.
From the video, I was like, wow.
Yeah, I feel really fortunate to be able to do this work and see the places I get to go and meet the people and be in relationship with them. So Kilaridi Masai, who's featured on the song, you can hear him rapping in English and Swahili and Masai.
Wow.
Triangle
but, rapper, that's
crazy. Yeah, right? Everyone I deal with in Africa speaks like at least three languages.
Oh
right?
my gosh.
And so he invited me to, you know, he initiated me into this project, which is this farm that he wanted to found. So he founded a farm on the rim of Ngorongoro Crater. And that's where we shot a lot of the video at.
Cool. Wow. Yeah, it's gorgeous. The scenery for that. That's awesome. Okay, well, I have five more questions for you. And
okay.
these are like quick hits. So
give
me like the first thing that comes to mind.
Got you.
When you're rapping, what is your pre-show ritual?
Well, it used to be to go take a walk by myself and have like one shot of probably bourbon or scotch to try to like loosen my nerves up and then to try to rhyme some of my most intricate verses to like get my voice ready.
Yeah.
I used to do maybe I don't know, about 150 push-ups.
150 push-ups?
Yeah, like sets of 30.
Whoa.
Yeah, like five sets of 30. And stretch, like, you know, stretch my shoulders.
Nice.
And hips. Just because I want to move around on stage.
Uh-huh.
I want to be active. And I want to feel a certain amount of adrenaline, but also a certain amount of calm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if I can be calm, but a little bit amped, it enables me to, I think, deliver energy that's more like engaging for my audience.
Yeah.
You like said short answers. I'm like over here like going off.
No, this is awesome. I'm glad I know that you do 150 push-ups before your show. I'm impressed. What's your favorite venue in Portland?
You know, there's a couple that have really dynamite sound. There's every show that I played at the Get Down is good.
Oh, yeah.
I also like playing Star Theater. The Good Foot is a nice intimate room. Alberta Street Pub is a nice intimate room that often has good sound. Shout out to Nick and Noah. Let's see. Another good room for an intimate show is Javelina over in downtown St. John's.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, yeah. It's Javelina. A small spot. Yeah.
Okay, that's good to know. I'll check it out. Cool. What are you listening to right now?
I'm taking a break.
Yeah?
Yeah, I had to listen to my album so many times that my ears are a little bit burnt out.
Uh-huh.
There are some artists that I've been getting turned on to, but I'm not in the right headspace to remember the names right now. Yeah, so I feel, you know.
Yeah, taking a break. What is your favorite self-care activity? Like, what's been getting you through lately?
So two artists that local artists that I'm really feeling right now. Three local artists that I'm feeling. One is in Atlanta right now, but A Revolution. Swiggle Mandela and Serge Severe, who's now in LA.
Okay.
So I'm really feeling their work. Cool. Now, what was that last question?
Your favorite self-care activity right now.
My favorite self-care activity, it's a tie between waking up really early and working out and taking a nap when I can.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I'm changing this one a little bit for you just because you're active in the activist community here. So, Portland musicians and activists everyone should know about.
Well, Swiggle Mandela, he's one of the hardest working artists out here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to check him out.
Check him out. Aaron Nigel Smith, aka Trench Town, does amazing amazing work. Shout out to the research and shout out to Rhythm and Revolution, the year of hip hop. Shout out to Talilo Marfil. Just one of the hardest working artists that I know of. And both Talilo and Swiggle are going to be playing at the Reeser on May 9th with Neighborhood Kids. Shout out to Neighborhood Kids, bringing it that spirit that's somewhere between Public Enemy and Rage Against the Machine, but in a young hip hop group. You know,
wow, I can't wait to see them.
Yeah, shout out to A Revolution and Killeridi Masai, DJ Clavicle, and Johnny Cool.
Cool,
yeah,
awesome. Well, thank you for speaking with me today. This has been awesome. Everyone, the album Retribution, when is that coming out?
April 3rd, it'll be available for streaming, and I'm not going to be able to put out wax till later this summer.
All right.
But the CDs will be in hand, so if you can come out to the shows, I'm playing a private show in Centralia, Washington this weekend for Wills of Soul, but I will be doing May 9th. At the Reeser, with Neighborhood Kids and the other artists I mentioned. So come on out, grab a CD. Cool. But, you know, on all the platforms, April 3rd, check it out, Retribution.
Retribution. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Alex.
That was my interview with Mike Crenshaw. You can find him on Instagram at Mike Crenshaw, and his album is coming out on April 3rd, titled Retribution. I'm Alex Engelhart. This is Locals Only. Thank you for listening.
Ice, baby, no take question. It's hot outside, get a mop in a bucket. People working hard, regardless, struggling, leave them alone. We want freedom and justice. Ice, baby, no take question. It's hot outside, get a mop in a bucket. People working hard, regardless, struggling, leave them alone. We want freedom and justice. Five alarm, firebomb, firestorm, firearms. Don't mean a thing to the rising sun. I might be wrong, but life goes on. Some of the forces come into orbit. Kerosene flares, Zippos, torches, barbecue grills, backyards, and porches. Some of us are warriors and others are lawyers. All of us engaged, we can't avoid it. New York, California, Florida, Oregon, Maine, and Washington. Stay up off of us like ice crush. Drinks are officers, react to be trapped. Don't be preposterous. A lot of us gonna be anonymous. Protect you for minimum, make moves defending them. From a noose to spinning them, swinging like pendulums. I'm on the nose, not too subliminal. No corny flows, I'm true original. Obvious influence, public enemy. PRT taught me how to use my intellect. Writing in the wall, you ain't changed your mind yet. What's the propaganda done frame your mindset? Call it SD, cause the state's divided. A dangerous time when we ain't united. Ice outside the place I reside at. No space is safe when the state is violent. Mom in a tree with a baby hiding. Israel gets paid for training they provided. If your heart is hateful, then they may just hire you to be a henchman for a racist tyrant. Ice, ice, baby, no take question. It's hot outside, get a mop in a bucket. People working hard, regardless, struggling. Leave them alone, we want freedom and justice. Ice, ice, baby, no take question. It's hot outside, get a mop in a bucket. People working hard, regardless, struggling. Leave them alone, we want freedom and justice.
Aye, so what you know about oppression?
About oppression.
Type shit got me stressing.
It got me stressing.
Feel it in my spirit, got a message.
I got a message.
Through education, not correction. I've been trying to change my ways. Weed and liquor got me faced. Wanna do it for the culture. Black and brown is here to stay. I've been trading on this water. I don't know if I'm okay. Trying to stack a couple chips before the 501 my case. Aye, so what you know about oppression?
About oppression.
Type shit got me stressed.
It got me stressing.
I feel it in my spirit, got a message.
I got a message.
Through education, got correction.
Ice, ice, baby, no take question. It's hot outside, get a mop in a bucket. People working hard, regardless, struggling. Leave them alone, we want freedom and justice. Ice, ice, baby, no take question. It's hot outside, get a mop in a bucket. People working hard, regardless, struggling. Leave them alone, we want freedom and justice.
Anti-racist since adolescence. We defended the friends of the sales of weapons. Anti-establishment, cause they anti-African. Anti-capitalist, can't buy happiness. Anti-fascist due to anti-blackness. Fuck the administration and the cabinet. Fools can't aim, who'll take a stab at it? Hit him in the abdomen, slash his cap. Don't let fear press you, peer pressure. Don't succumb to stress. Trying to be impressed, better know what's best, go get some rest. Oppression is present no matter who's elected. These uniformed terrorists won't protect us. Bless the ancestors, death to oppressors. There's more to humanity, whatever the West is. We chant down Babylon, making it festive.
Aye, so what you know about oppression?
About oppression.
Type shit got me stressed.
It got me stressing.
I feel it in my spirit, got a message.
I got a message.
Through education, got correction.
Ice, ice, baby, no take question. It's hot outside, get a mop in a bucket. People working hard, regardless, struggling. Leave them alone, we want freedom and justice. Ice, ice, baby, no take question. It's hot outside, get a mop in a bucket. People working hard, regardless, struggling. Leave them alone, we want freedom and justice.